on Chof Zayin Omud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom. One, Abraham.
We started telling a story yesterday where Ben Domar, the nephew of Rabbi Shmuel, was bitten by a snake.
Yaakov Ishkrat Tanya, Amin, wanted to treat him, and Rabbi Shmuel told Ben Domar, you're not allowed to. Ben Domar said, but I have a proof from the Torah that it's allowed. And then he died before he was able to even say what his proof was. And Rabbi Shmuel said, you know what, Ben Domar, even though you died, you're better off that you weren't over on Dibur Chachamim, because then that would have been something irreparable.
It's not the proof that you died before giving it.
Well, so we're going to figure out in a second what the proof was.
Right.
So, no, well, actually, we did. The last thing we said yesterday is, my Havel is actually some 9 lines from the bottom. We'll begin. Well, my Havel Elamim. So what would Ben Domar have said if he hadn't died?
Right.
He would have said, as the Pasuk says, V'chai b'hem v'lo shiyamos b'hem. The Torah says you should live through the mitzvahs, not die through them. Therefore, how can it be that you're not allowed to be healed by a min, but when it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, then it should be an exception. Vir Rabbi Shmuel, so what would Rabbi Shmuel have answered to that if Ben Domar had actually brought him that proof? And the fact is he didn't allow him to, so obviously it means that he wouldn't have accepted that.
Right.
Rabbi Shmuel would say, Hanim Yilabitzina, that is true in private, that if not a lot of people know about it, but if it's in public, then you have a matter of Chilul Hashem, that people learn from it to be careless with mitzvahs. So in this case, we said yesterday that a min is somebody that you might follow them, so other people might learn from that.
Nobody knows what it means.
No, so people knew that this issue. People knew that.
In this case,
right? In another case, theoretically, if nobody knows he's a min, if nobody knows he's a min except you, then it's not Pahestia, I guess. I don't know. Pahestia means that ten Jews know about the situation. So that not. Then you have a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem,
mm-hmm.
and then therefore it would be also.
Well, as it could be just in regards to Avodah Zarah.
Well, right. That's the Gemara is going to say. Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, Hoyer Bishmol, Minayin Shem, Omim Loyla Olam Avodah, Avodah Zarah, Avodah Zarah. How do we know if people tell a person, worship Avodah Zarah, and then you won't be killed? She Yavid Val Yahorig. How do we know that normally, under normal circumstances, says Rabbi Shmuel, he should worship Avodah Zarah rather than be killed? Now, this is not, that part's not the halacha, by the way. We learned in Sanhedrin that the big three you always most in nefesh for.
Yeah.
But we had different.
We bring this here?
Because we're mentioning Rabbi Shmuel's complete statement. That Talmud Lev.
Bitsina, it might be different.
No. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is Avodah Zarah doesn't matter Bitsina or Pahestia. The Pahestia makes a difference as far as other mitzvahs. You have according to the actual halacha, as it comes out from the Gemara and Sanhedrin, it's basically like this. The big three is always, you have to be Moshe Nefesh on, Yehorek Val Yavar. The other mitzvahs, it depends. If it's Shasa Shmad, also any mitzvahs, and if it's Perhesia, if the Goy is doing it in order to make you go against Yiddishkeit, and it is in Perhesia, then you have to be Moshe Nefesh even for other mitzvahs. If it's Bitsina, then not.
Right.
Shavu Dezora, give us your Arayat and Shavu Dezora. Yes. So, but Rabbi Shmuel holds differently.
It's interesting that we had to have Rabbi Shmuel making a statement, knowing that he was killed.
He was killed. There wasn't
Kiddush Hashem.
Fine, he was killed on Kiddush Hashem, but it wasn't specifically for Avodah Zarah. He was killed because the Chachamim were the Romans were killing the Chachamim at that time. It was a Shata Shmad is back a different. Shata Shmad is different, right?
Fine.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, but Rabbi
teaching Torah in public.
No, that's not Rabbi Shmuel. No, that doesn't say that he was. Okay, so how do we know that you should allow yourself, you should worship Avodah Zarah rather than be killed? Talmud Lama v'chai b'hem v'lo shiyamos b'hem. Says Rabbi Shmuel, because of v'chai b'hem, you should live through the Torah. Yochol afilu b'pahestia. However, you would think that applies even if it's in public. No, Talmud Lama v'lo sechal alo eschein kodshi. Therefore, the Pasuk says, don't desecrate my holy name. So therefore, if it's a pahestia, you have a problem of chilul Hashem. Then you don't have any exceptions.
But wait a minute. We're talking about here v'chai b'hem. Who says it's a mitzvah to ask a min to cure you?
But in this case, the only person available to cure him was this min, and therefore Ben Domar argued that I should be allowed, and Rabbi Shmuel would have agreed if it was Bitsina, but the problem was that it wasn't. It was Bepahesia. At least 10 Jews knew about the situation and knew that Yaakov Ishkar Tchanya is a min, and as Tosfos says, that he was going to heal him using a spell, using the name of Yoshka, whatever, and therefore that makes it different.
Can you call it a mitzvah? To be cured by
what do you mean? Can you call it a mitzvah? If you have a mitzvah to save your life, if it was Bitsina, then you would be allowed to do that, says Rabbi Shmuel. Now the Chachamim disagree with that. The Chachamim disagree that, and they say that even Bitsina, there's a difference between Avodas Chachamim and other mitzvahs. So even within that, fine, you have distinctions, whether you're talking about actual avodah zarah, whether I mentioned yesterday what Tosfos says about a distinction based on what the Rishalmi says. If you're using something that was brought from avodah zarah without it being said in so many words that it's from avodah zarah, that's different. But here we're talking about in this case it was kahesi. Had it been betzina, then it might have been different. Fine. So that was the story. Okay. Further on,
say it was avodah zarah.
What? Again, but Rabbi Shmuel is saying that when there's a matter of chilul Hashem, then there's a matter of chilul Hashem. Then these exceptions don't apply. Here it would have been a matter of chilul Hashem. So therefore, no. Okay. Amar Rabbi Balchana, Amar Rabbi Yechna. We're talking again. The Or Mishnah had mentioned that you're not allowed to be treated by a goyish doctor, and we've talked about the various. We've talked about a couple of scenarios so far. We had Rabbi Yehuda saying that nothing, not even you have a puncture from bloodletting, you're not allowed to have a goy treated afterwards. We had the distinction that Rabbi Yochanan or Rav Chista made that it depends whether the patient is definitely going to die without treatment or not. If he's definitely going to die, then you have nothing to lose anyway. Now we have another distinction. Amar Rav Babachana Amar Rav Yochanan. Kol maka shemachalam alayos haShabbos ein misdrapim mehen. Any kind of injury where it's dangerous enough that it would be something you'd have to break Shabbos for, that kind of thing ein misdrapim mehen, that kind of thing you're not allowed to seek treatment from a goyish doctor. Again, you know, as we've been saying all this time, it doesn't necessarily mean the goyish doctor, doesn't necessarily mean a professional, doesn't necessarily mean the goyish doctor is in later times after the time of the Gemara where the goyim eventually became more civilized. Yeah, we're talking about a lay person, an Ovid Avodah Sechavim in those times. Yeah. So the rule would be, therefore, anything which is dangerous enough that you'd have to break Shabbos for, you're not allowed to have them treat.
Delivery
is a different thing. We said before that you don't have a goy to deliver because we're concerned about Shvichas Dam. That's a different thing. The Ikadamri, another version of the... Now, so again, I mentioned yesterday, Rashi says that Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with the Rabbi Yehuda's statement before. Rabbi Yehuda's statement before at the bottom of Amud Aleph was that even a puncture from bloodletting, you shouldn't have a goy treat afterwards, even though that's not something you would be Mechal Shabbos for. If a person had bloodletting done on Erev Shabbos, let's say in Shabbos, they feel it's hurting, you wouldn't be allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to treat them. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda's rule, you should be allowed to get such treatment. According to Rabbi Yehuda's rule, though, he's saying you're not allowed to even get such treatment from a goy. According to Rabbi Yochanan, it sounds like you would. Tosfos learns that no, they're not actually arguing. And we said yesterday that Tosfos makes a three-way distinction between whether it's something that is the person completely healthy. There's not really the slightest chance that the treatment would kill him. Then you're not allowed to, because then we have to be concerned. The doctor may not be concerned about his professional reputation. Okay, people will say the patient died. People are going to think, okay, it's that he had a personal vendetta against that guy or something. It won't prevent other people from going to this doctor. Whereas if it's something that is serious enough to break Shabbos for, then also not, because again, he might kill him figuring that, look, you know, there's a good chance he's going to die anyway. It won't ruin his professional reputation. Versus you have something in between where the person is sick. So not just like a puncture from bloodletting, it's more than that, but not quite to the extent where you would have to break Shabbos for it. That Tosfos says Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehuda would agree that you're allowed to seek treatment from a goy for that. Because then on the one hand, it's not so dangerous that there's a high chance that the patient will die. And on the other hand, the fact is he is suffering from some kind of illness, which may or may not kill him. Therefore, the goy will be afraid of his professional reputation, and therefore he won't try anything funny.
Or he could. But Rabbi Yochanan says no.
No, so that's the thing. Tosfos is saying that Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yehuda, are not actually arguing. Rabbi Yehuda is talking about one scenario. Rabbi Yochanan is talking about a different scenario, but a third possible scenario, which neither of them is dealing with. When you have something which is serious, but not so serious to break Shabbos for, you have a person is sick. Not just we're talking about, in other words, one particular limb aches or whatever, where there's no chance of them dying from it, like with the bloodletting puncture.
Rabbi Yehuda is saying...
Again, if the person is so sick, that is something you'd have to break Shabbos for.
Right.
That is something you're not allowed to have a goy treat. So that's the thing. Tosfos was saying you have three possibilities. You have where the person is basically healthy, but you just have one. He has one particular limb, like over there with the bloodletting puncture. He has one particular limb that's hurting him. There's no chance under any circumstances that the person is going to die from it. That Rabbi Yehuda is saying not, because if I can't, then the goy may figure that he can get away with killing the yid, and other people will figure it doesn't reflect badly on the doctor. It just means he had a particular personal hate for this guy, and therefore he treated him badly. Doesn't mean that other people wouldn't go to him for such things. And on the other extreme, if it's something so serious to break Shabbos for, you also wouldn't. But if you have in between, where the person really is, seriously sick, but it's ein by sakana, it's a chola she'ein by sakana, he's seriously sick, but not so much that you'd be mechal Shabbos for it, then Tosfos says both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan would agree that you can take treatment from a goy.
But the only point they defer on is what?
So that's the thing. So according to Rashi, you have Rabbi Yehuda and then you have Rabbi Yochanan. They're arguing. Rabbi Yehuda is saying no treatment at all. Rabbi Yochanan is saying only if it's something really dangerous. And according to Tosfos, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yochanan would both agree that if it's something that where the person is sick but not deathly sick, so it's not doesn't rise to the level of Chilul Shabbos, then you would be allowed to get treatment from a goy for that.
I don't understand how you see that in those words, because the way he said it, there's
kol makas machal on alaya after Shabbos ain misrap in mehen, implying. But if it's a serious enough maka, if it's a maka, in other words, we're not just talking about some kind of, like Rashi says, maka sakana, something that involves danger, but versus she'en ba sakana, versus where there's no danger. So that's the thing. That's what Tosfos is saying. If you look in the middle of the Tosfos over there, you can see.
It's implied, basically.
It's implied, basically. V'chi ein bo sakana. Look about 10 lines from the bottom line, beginning the sukkon. V'chi ein bo sakana. If there's no danger in it, mutu lihisrapos, then you're allowed to be healed by them. V'ask she'en imuncha. Even if the guy is not a professional, devade lo yumisenu, he's for sure not going to try to kill him. Delen mutu lihishtamuti, because he's not going to be able to get away with any excuse. This is not something that would ordinarily be expected to kill. The Ikatli, and if he were to kill, Mari Nakshayu, he would make a bad reputation for himself. Aval Babori, but when the person is perfectly healthy, and it's only that he has some kind of like minor injury, then ribbed to Kosilta, like the puncture from bloodletting, Mia also, then it is also, Sha'ovit Kuchav Mazikar Vaina Khoshish, because then the goy may harm him without being concerned. Kiloi Mora Napshayim Yimisenu, he won't cause himself a bad reputation if he kills him. Sha'yomro Olam, because people will say, Bavadim Mazit is goy. Fine, it must not be, it's not that he accidentally, it's not that it was a mistake. In other words, the idea is, Tosfos is establishing, when would the person be concerned about his reputation when people would say, you know what, this doctor doesn't know what he's doing. He made a mistake. He accidentally did the wrong treatment and therefore killed the patient, therefore we shouldn't go to him. And therefore he's concerned about that. As opposed to if people figure that he must have killed him deliberately, that wouldn't prevent other people from going to this doctor, because they could say, okay, he had something personal against that guy. Doesn't mean that he doesn't have anything personal against me, therefore I have no problem going there.
But he's in a good shape.
Still, I don't understand.
People are much more likely to say he did it deliberately.
No, but that's why Tosfos, exactly, Tosfos says that if the guy's in good shape and just he has a puncture in his shoulder from bloodletting, then no. That's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. And if on the other hand he's very, very sick, so much that we'd have to be Mechal Shabbos for him, you have the distinction that we said before, whether he's definitely going to die without the treatment or not. But you have cases where a person is not definitely going to die without the treatment, but nevertheless it's considered serious enough, as the Gemara is going to give us a number of examples now, where you're Mechal Shabbos anyway, because it's considered dangerous. So if you have a case like that where conceivably the person might recover without the treatment, but nevertheless the condition is so serious that you're Mechal Shabbos for him, that you also can't go to a treatment for a goyish doctor, because again, then the goy may figure he can get away with killing him, and people will figure, okay, look, you know, he had a good chance of dying anyway.
The middle case,
Tosfos says, would be allowed. Who the halacha is like in that is it machlokas rishonim itself. You have some rishonim learn like Rashi, and you have, I think the Rambam, for example, learns like Rashi, and you have other rishonim who learn like Tosfos.
You don't have to get stuck on it. I just don't see how that in Rabbi Yochanan's work.
Because he's saying, if it's a makar shemachal on alayas Shabbos, ain't misdrapin mehen, implying, but if it's not machal on alayas Shabbos, then you could be misdrapin mehen.
So there's only two possibilities.
No, but there's three, because you have the third possibility, which is rivda de kosilta, which is something that doesn't even rise to the level of a makar.
Meaning there's two that are not machal, two possibilities that are not machal in Shabbos.
Right.
And, okay.
Right. Yeah, one thing Tosfos says is, because before, when the Gemara brought Rabbi Yehuda's statement, if Rabbi Yochanan is arguing with it, the Gemara should have brought Rabbi Yochanan's statement then. It shouldn't have waited with it till here.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. The Ikadamri, another version of Rabbi Yochanan's statement, Amar Rav Abba Chana Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Makar Shal Cholol Ein Mitzrapim Mehen. any wound that involves any wound or any injury or whatever or condition that involves the cholol, the interior of the body, ein mischaf and mehen, you're not allowed to be treated by a goy. So Rash, so, what do you mean? Everything is in the interior of the body. Some things are on it. No. What are you talking about? If you have a skin condition, that's not a makas or cholol.
Depends.
What do you mean? Depends. It either is or it isn't.
No, it can be or it may not.
No, come on. The question is,
you have skin conditions that affect the inside of the body.
That's fine. And then that would, okay, b'chol gufo, Rashi says, in the interior of his body, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi, that means kol shu menachol v'lefnim. Anything that's from the interior of the body going inward, as the Gemara is going to say soon, from the lips inward. So actually, it comes out, basically, according to the two definitions, the question would be, right, what about if it's something, for example, that involves, let's say, the blood vessels or what have you in a person's arm or leg? According to one definition, you could call it milafnim minachol, because it is inside of the body. On the other hand, maybe it means only inside the torso or whatever. Okay, it's two different ways of looking at it. So the question is, my binai, what is the practical difference? What is an example of, we know that any makashol cholol, any wound, any injury that involves the inside of the body, you're mechal Shabbos for. So in that case, then the two definitions amount to the same thing. If you say mechal amounts to Shabbos, or you say makashol cholol, what's the difference? The answer is, ikabinai gav hayad v'gav haregel. The nafkamina between them would be, for example, an injury on the back of the hand or on the top part of the foot, namely, which those are not a makashol cholol. On the other hand, were mechal Shabbos on them. So here's an example of what you were saying. You were arguing that cholol can also include skin conditions. So here, d'amar ader b'masna amar rav, gav hayad v'gav haregel, an injury on the back of the hand or on the top of the foot, harei hein k'makashol cholol, they are considered like an injury in the interior of the body because you have major blood vessels that go through there, and an injury there can kill a patient. Exactly. Therefore, mechal l'anas Shabbos, therefore mechal Shabbos for such a thing. So according to the first definition, kol makashol mechal l'anas Shabbos, it would mean for an injury to the back of the hand or the top of the foot, you should not go to a goyish doctor. According to the second one, that it's specifically makash or cholo, then those kinds of things, even though you're machal Shabbos, for them you could. So that would be the nafkamina. So now we're kind of going to digress. We've been dealing with the din of going to a goyish.
What's the halacha before we switch to another topic? It's important to know.
So again. How much the actual practical halacha nowadays is? Practical halacha nowadays is, again, you usually don't go to amateurs, you go to professional doctors. Yeah. A mumche is different, as we've been saying before. They have a professional reputation to maintain. You also, on top of that, you have, again, the goyim nowadays are generally more civilized than they were in the old days. You also have, there are stricter punishments, there are stricter laws and punishments for malpractice or for murder or whatever. And therefore, in general, by and large, these dinim are not applied nowadays.
Just ignore them, or?
You have to know the dinim are in Shulchan Aruch, but practically speaking, we're not.
It's unapplicable. You cannot.
In that sense, they're inapplicable, right? The last line of Tosfos, for example, on Chavzayin Amud Beis there says that if the person is a mumcha l'rabim, it's allowed, and based on that, we go and we get bloodletting done by goyim, because anybody who does bloodletting is an expert. No amateurs do it. So nowadays, that's pretty much true of any medical treatment. You don't really have amateurs do medical treatment.
And if you have, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, this is also true, right? So now the Gemara is going to kind of digress. Since we mentioned the concept of breaking Shabbos for certain kinds of injuries or conditions or whatever, so now the Gemara is going to digress to talk more about these dinim of Shabbos. So even though we're in Masechta Avodah Zarah, we're going to be kind of jumping over to dinim of Shabbos. Kol makash etzricha oimed, any kind of injury or any kind of condition that requires an evaluation. Rashi says that it means that it's such a dangerous condition that people have to sit and evaluate, well, is the person likely to live? Is the person likely to survive it or not? Then that would be an evaluation. In other words, doctors have to evaluate and see what his chances of survival are. Yeah. So anything which is that serious that you have to evaluate what his chances of survival are is considered something that you can break Shabbos for. The Ritva asks in that case, it's poshut. Why do we have to say that? Of course. And he says it means a little bit differently. He says the Gemara in Yuma, which is the main place where it talks about these dinim of the Kuach Nefesh on Shabbos and on Yom Kippur and whatever, it discusses over there usually what you do is, so you go according to the doctors who are there, whatever their opinion is, and you go according to the majority if they disagree. You also have, if the patient themselves speaks up and says that I need treatment, then you also break Shabbos for them, even if the doctors disagree. Lev yadeh moras nafsheh, as the Gemara says, but there, a person knows their own situation. Lev yadeh moras nafsheh, the heart knows its own bitterness. So, but what about if you have a case where the patient himself is not speaking up and you don't have any doctors available? Then we have to figure, is this the kind of thing where we would have to look at his chances of survival? That's what we're saying, and we're machal Shabbos for.
That's what catastrophe happens.
Yeah. Okay. I don't understand what that means.
Because if you leave that decision to people who don't have the...
Therefore, because you see that it's the kind of thing where there's a chance that the person may not survive, therefore you break Shabbos.
That's the point.
So that's the point. In other words, you don't have doctors. So if you don't have doctors available and the patient himself is not speaking up, then that's the metric that you have to use. What else are you going to use? So the metric is if there's any reason to think that the person's life is in danger, you break Shabbos. That's what it is. Anything where there needs to be an evaluation. I'm not understanding what your problem is there. Okay.
1 second. You're jumping. Who's making the determination to make
the people who are there? Who else is supposed to make the determination?
That is the problem. People cannot make a determination when they're not professionals.
What do you want to do? Go
have an evaluation done and then by professionals determine whether or not that person
continue.
Needs.
We're talking on Shabbos over here. You're asking, do you need to be? Are you going to be mechallel Shabbos? You don't have any professionals around. So therefore, you have to go according to, is this something that is so serious that you need that you have to evaluate if the person is likely to live or die from it? If it's how else are you supposed to do it? Okay, I really don't understand what your problem is. I don't think you're understanding me. So, okay.
I understand what you're saying.
Okay.
But
that's how it is. You have to do something, and therefore what you do is you determine it. If there are doctors, you go by them. If not, then you go by what the patient says. If none of the above, if you don't have doctors and the patient himself isn't speaking up, then the bystanders have to make a split-second decision. Is it something where there's reason to think the person's life is in danger, and then that's Tzricha Oymed, and then you're Mechal Shabbos?
When there's a doubt.
Then you're Mechal Shabbos because of the death.
You're
Mechal Shabbos. Fine, that's what we're saying.
Okay. Yeah. We're not saying that.
Okay, that's what I was saying. Fine. Omer of Shon Ba'aba Omer of Yechanan. Bahai Ishta Smirta. Here's an example. A high fever, or the Rambam understands it a little bit differently. It means a fever with chills. Tamaka shall hold on me. That is also considered an internal injury. Mechal Shabbos, and therefore you're Mechal Shabbos. Fine. What is the definition of an internal injury? Where does the inside begin? So Rabami explained it means from the lips inward. So the question is, Rabbi Lazar asked the question, what about kachi v'shinmai? What about if you have an injury or whatever to the kachi and the teeth? Rashi explains that kachi means the gums. Tosfos has a number of problems with that, based on this Gemara, based on other Gemaras, and therefore Tosfos says kachi means the molars, and shini means the chewing teeth, or not the biting teeth, rather. Whatever. So what if you have something where you have a condition involving those? Kiven da'akushin, do we say because they're hard, therefore it's not so serious, something that happens with them, kamaka debroidom, or maybe therefore they're considered like an external injury, like an injury to the skin or whatever. Or maybe not. The fact is they are within the lips. Maybe they're considered an internal injury. Come, we can prove it from a Mishnah in Shabbos. The Mishnah says over there, if a person has a toothache, he's not allowed to swallow vinegar because vinegar...
Choshesh means an ache.
Choshesh means an ache, yeah. So now the Mishnah and Shabbos, the Mishnah and Shabbos and the Gemara over there discusses that in general refuah is also on Shabbos wherever there's no sakana. Obviously, where there's a sakana, we said before you machal Shabbos.
Okay.
But where there's no sakana,
when there's a doubt.
Yes, when there's any doubt, right. But when there's definitely no sakana, you don't even take refuah even where there's not any issur d'oraisa involved, because the chachamim were concerned that if you're allowed to do that, you will come to grind medicines on Shabbos, which would be an issur d'oraisa. So therefore,
that's why also today, because we don't find
medicines, but nevertheless, when a takana is made, then it usually continues to exist. So you have, again, you have the Gemara in Shabbos over there and other places discusses different details about it. It depends. Is it something affecting only that one limb? Is it something where the person has to take to bed because they're feeling so bad from it? So there's a three-level distinction, basically. There's sakana, there's ein by sakana, but the person has to stay in bed, and there's just what's called mechush ba'alma, just like the person has an ache, but nothing more, so discomfort, basically, but nothing more serious than that. So the Mishnah says over there that a person has a toothache, he's not allowed to swallow vinegar, he's not allowed to gulp down vinegar on Shabbos. Vinegar would be good for a toothache, at least temporarily. But the point is, so we're saying only because choshesh hu deloy, apparently the Mishnah is saying if it's just that he has an ache, it's bothering him a bit, then not, ha-koyev le-tuva, but it sounds like if it's hurting him a lot, shafir nami, it sounds from the wording of the Mishnah that it would be okay. And therefore, so we see from that, you're allowed to do such refuah on Shabbos, so therefore, that would mean, therefore, that a severe toothache would be considered a makash ha-cholo. And to that extent, you can be mechal Shabbos for. Practically speaking, that thing doesn't require any more chilul Shabbos than just to be over on the zera of taking medicine on Shabbos.
What's the problem with chometz? There's no grinding.
There isn't, but chometz is not something that healthy people normally drink.
Okay.
And the rule is, the Mishnah says over there, anything that healthy people would normally eat or drink, even if it has medicinal value, you're allowed to on Shabbos. But things that are only eaten or drunk for medicinal purposes, those you're not allowed to take on Shabbos, again, where there's just mechush ba'alma, where there's just an ache or a discomfort or whatever.
Because of the Xera.
Once the Chacham said made a Xera, no medicines on Shabbos, then it means including such things also, right?
Even though there's no grinding.
Even though in this particular case there's no grinding, right? Anything where you can tell that he's doing it for medicinal purposes, as opposed to if he were to be drinking something which people normally drink anyway, even though it happens to be effective for this also, that would be allowed.
Now, if he takes the medication during the week, then he can take it on Shabbos?
Yes, we're actually going to have something involving that in a few lines of the Gemara. But wait. Okay. Anyway, so the question is, so the proof is, if the Mishnah uses the word choshesh, implying that it bothers him a bit, then he's not allowed to, implying, but if it was a real severe toothache, then he would be allowed to. So there we have our answer. But it is not necessary. Maybe the Mishnah uses the word choshesh in a generic sense, meaning any kind of thing where a person has a toothache, regardless whether it's minor or severe. And therefore, so you don't really have proof from that Mishnah one way or the other. Maybe it means even a severe toothache is not enough to be over on the gzera of the Chachamim about medicine and swallow vinegar.
And that's just for tooth. What about?
Well, we were asking about teeth. We were asking about, again, according to Rashi, we were asking about gums and teeth. According to Tosfos, we're only asking about teeth, molars and cutting teeth.
Right.
So therefore, we don't have an answer yet.
But we're trying to define.
What is the definition of chol exactly? So we don't know yet. Okay. Toshma, come. We'll bring a proof from a story. Rabbi Yochanan chash betzav dina. Rabbi Yochanan one time was affected by hurting from tzav dina. So Rashi just says over here that it means some kind of sickness involving his teeth. But Rashi uses a French word which Steinsaltz translates as meaning something like a fungal infection. So it could be like thrush or something like that.
Mishka
is the word Rashi uses. Yeah. Many people understand it to be, based on what the Gemara is going to say later about the symptoms, many people understand it to be scurvy, which is a disease caused by a lack of vitamin C. Whatever it is, in modern Hebrew, they actually took that. In modern Hebrew, they use the word sabdina as in that. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan had this, the rosh of scurvy or whatever it is. So he went to a certain Roman lady for a cure. Avda chamsho male shabsa. She did it for him. She gave him the treatment on Thursday and on Friday. Omalah, so he asked her, l'mochamai, what about tomorrow? Friday and Erev Shabbos, yeah. So he asked her, what about tomorrow? I can't come to you because I'm teaching my Talmidim. She said to him, "Eat tzrichas. You're not going to need it by then. It's only a 2-day thing."
Good.
Fine. He says, "Eat tzrich namai, and what if I find I do still need it?" That answers your question. If you've been taking medicine before Shabbos, and it's something that you have to continue taking for a few days straight, then yes, you're allowed to continue taking it on Shabbos. Yeah. Okay.
But not adding a new medication.
Right. Omra, so she, again, unless there's something that affects, no, never mind Pekuach Nefesh. We said even if it's something that affects that we're pain, where his whole body is in so much pain from this one particular thing that hurts that he has to lie in bed. Then you're allowed to be over. Then certain things are allowed on Shabbos. You can tell a goy to do things. For example, actually, in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about speaking of toothaches. I mean, in the end, the Gemara is not really going to come to any conclusion about this matter of teeth. But again, because of the suffix, then we're makel. So what in Shulchan Aruch it brings that if a person has a really severe toothache, then and it's the kind where vinegar or what have you is not going to help, you're allowed to have a goyish dentist pull the tooth on Shabbos.
Pull the tooth. Not repair the nerve.
I don't know. I mean, I mean, the times when the Shulchan Aruch was written, they didn't have very good dentistry. So I don't know if you could talk in terms of saving the tooth. But in those times, we're talking about if you had a rotten tooth, the only thing to do would be to pull it. But the point is that the Alpha Debbie discusses. There's two possibilities. Either it is actually a malacha d'oraisa, however, you're having a goy do it, and in that case, it would be allowed again because bother is it's paining your whole body. What about you're opening your mouth? You're whatever. No, never mind. Never deserve. You're opening your mouth. You're making it possible for him to do. The Alpha Debbie says big deal. Just helping him out by doing that is not considered to have anything to be anything significant.
What's the malacha involved?
The malacha would be goizes. You're pulling or coats or whatever. You're taking something from its natural place of growth, the tooth from the gum. On the other hand, and then the Alpha Debbie mentions in parenthesis over there that another possibility is you could argue maybe this is considered malacha she'en tzricha legufa. Maybe this is considered it's not really a malacha d'oraisa because the malacha would be where you're pulling something out because you need the actual thing. Here you're not. You don't need the actual disease tooth. So therefore, maybe even then on those grounds it would also be considered. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Okay, so anyway, back to Rabbi Yechanan. So he says to this lady, so what if I do need the treatment on Shabbos? Omra, so she says, before I tell you, ishtabali delay maglis. Swear to me that you won't reveal it to anybody else. She wanted to keep it her secret. Okay.
The treatment that she used.
Ishtabala, so he swore to her as follows, lelekodi yisra loy maglina. To the God of the Jewish people, I will not reveal it. Well, Galilei, she revealed it to him. The next day, Shabbos, Rabbi Yechanan went and told it over in his public drasha. So the question is, obviously, what about he swore to her or at the Chilul Hashem? The answer is, he chose his words very carefully. He didn't swear by Hashem. He swore to Hashem, I will not reveal it. Implying, but I will reveal it to his people, the Jewish people. He didn't say, I won't do that. So the question wasn't about Chilul Hashem. The question was, how could he break his shvur? The answer was, it wasn't really a shvur, he swore that he's not going to tell it to Hashem, but he didn't mean that he can't tell it to people. The question is, v'ha'ika Chilul Hashem.
Hashem knows it. In any case.
V'ha'ika Chilul Hashem. The question is there a Chilul Hashem? She's going to think, she's not going to realize that nuance.
Right.
The answer is, the Galilam Ikra. What happened was, right, so what happened, Rabbi Yechanan told her, Lelekodi Yisrael Lemaglina, she told him the secret. Right after that, right there on Erev Shabbos, he said to her, you should know, I got you now. You told me your secret, and I didn't actually swear that I didn't actually make a valid shavua that I won't tell it. So therefore, when he goes and tells it the next day, and she finds out that now everybody knows it, it won't make a chilul Hashem because he already informed her at the time.
What about Ava?
Ava, we're not concerned about because this is something so important. It was so important that people should know this treatment to be able to cure this condition. The Chavos Yair talks about this in one of his shuvos that when you have a tzurah, Rabbi Yochanan himself, it's a tzurah problem. The public needs. The public has a need to know. There, it's not right that she should be keeping it as her secret. Actually, it's interesting, by the way, the Yerushalmi tells the story a little bit differently. The Yerushalmi doesn't have that Rabbi Yechanan swore to her, just says that she asked him not to tell, and then he went and told it anyway. So then the Yerushalmi says two versions of what happened after that. One is that she committed suicide because now she doesn't have anything left to live for. The other is just the opposite. She became a giyotis. She was so impressed by the fact that Rabbi Yechanan is looking out for the welfare of the Jewish people that he's willing to put himself in this situation that she went and became a giyotis.
I prefer that.
Second version. Yeah.
I prefer that.
All right. Anyway, Alma, so therefore...
We don't know which one.
Alma, so we see from this story, Kamaka Shochol Damya. Evidently, then, a Safdina is considered, which involves the teeth, is considered a Maka Shochol. That is why Rabbi Yechanan is asking, what do I do if I need to take the treatment on Shabbos? And that's how he wormed it out of her. So we see that it's considered a Maka Shochol. The answer is Omer of Nachmi. And by the way, I guess this isn't really a case where because you're taking what we were talking about a few minutes ago is if you have, for example, let's say you're taking antibiotics or something, if you stop taking them on Shabbos, then it undoes what you did the last couple of days. Here, it's not necessarily. Each individual treatment would make him feel better and better. It's not necessarily like it has to be cumulative. In principle, he might have been able to do it Thursday, Friday, skip Shabbos, continue Sunday. But like this, if it's a Makkah Shacholo, then that would be a valid reason to take it even if it was the first time on Shabbos. Okay, the answer is no, the Gemara says, not necessarily. Omer of Nachmi. So, Shiny Tzavdina. Tzavdina is a special case. Holo, Maskol, Bepeva, Gomer, Bepeva. This disease, Tzavdina, right. Thrush or scurvy or whatever it is a special case. Holo, Maskol, Bepeva, Gomer, Bepeva, because it begins in the mouth, but it ends up in the stomach. It ends up affecting other parts of the body as well. So either way, whether it's thrush or whether it's scurvy, it means, yeah, it's been spread, and it can become something more dangerous. So that, you could be Mechal Shabbos for. We don't necessarily see from that story that something that would only involve the teeth, like a toothache or whatever, that you should be allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for. Again, the Gemara hasn't come to any conclusion. Pretty much all the posts can say that, as usual, when it comes to Suffolk of the Korach Nefashos, we're Mechal, and therefore we allow it. Okay. My Simon. So, that's actually, I should say, I mean, we do and we don't allow it, kind of. So again, if it's a minor toothache, then no, a minor toothache is not considered severe enough to be Mechal Shabbos for. A major toothache, yeah, you could have a goy do a malacha such as
an
pulling a tooth. And abscesses we'll see later. Abscesses we'll discuss later. My simone, what are the simonim of, what are the symptoms of Tzavdina? Romi midi beikachi, the person will put something between his teeth, or according to Rashi, between his gums, or my sidomim, veidori, and blood will flow out from between the teeth. That's what brings many people to say that it's scurvy, because that is one of the early symptoms of scurvy, is that the gum is bleeding through. And in my habit, what causes this Tzavdina disease? Mikriri kri dechiti, it comes from eating very cold wheat foods during the winter. Or mechamimi chamimi desairi, or from eating very hot barley foods during the heat of summer. Or from eating the leftovers of kosa deharsina, which is a kind of fried fish. They would take fish, mix it with mash it up or whatever, and then fry it together with flour and its own juices. So it's sort of like breaded fish. So those kinds of things, eating those things, can cause Tzavdina. Steinsaltz argues maybe what the Gemara means is since if we say Tzavdina is scurvy, a lack of vitamin C, that kind of diet is low in vitamin C, and therefore a person could get it. I don't know. Anyway.
Could be rickets also.
Yeah. No, rickets has nothing to do with teeth, per se, though. Rickets, yeah. It affects long bones, really. Okay. I don't know. Anyway, fish have vitamin D, so that rickets is caused by a lack of vitamin D, so I don't know. Okay. My Abdullah, so okay, what was the actual treatment that this Maturinissa did for Rabbi Yechanan? Amar of Acha Brederova, Mesa Urva Shemen, you do as follows. You take water, you take the liquid from sourdough, Veshemen with oil, Veshemen Zayas and olive oil, or Melach and salt. The Pashtus, again, if it's scurvy, the olive oil has vitamin C, so that'll help. Or Mabra of Ashi, Mabra of Ashi says. Mabra of Ashi says a different recipe. Mishcha de Abza begad for de Abza. You take oil from a goose. The bird has its natural oil that it uses to put on its feathers. And you begad for de Abza, and you smear it on the gums. You smear it on the gums using a feather from a goose. So you take the goose feather, you dip it into this fat, and you apply it, and you apply it to the gums. Elsewhere, in Yomer Rashi gives a different.
Do you have to kill the goose for that or not?
If it's a feather, perhaps it's not. But Rashi in Yomer gives a different understanding of it. Gad for da'abda means the actual wing. Like you take the wing. No, you shech the goose. You're going to eat it anyway. Then you take the wing, and you use the end of that to apply this. Omer Abaya, I'm no Abdi Kulu. So Abaya says, one time I had Tzavdina, and I tried all these different prescriptions, remedies, Veloyt, sorry, and it didn't help. I wasn't cured. Ad to Omer Yahu Taya, until a certain Arab merchant, told me the following remedy. I see Kashiyosa Dezesa, take olive pits, Deloy Molotilsa, where the olives have not yet grown to a third of their full growth, the Kalanhu, and burn pits, Amorachadza on a new shovel, on the blade, I guess, of a new shovel. The Dovik Bay, Vidovit Vedadori and apply the ashes that result from that, apply those to the inside of the teeth. Avdi Hochi Vitasoi, so Rabbi says I did that and sure enough I was cured. So in that case, the ashes is not scurvy, but okay.
Scurvy wouldn't be treated with ashes.
I don't know. Okay. Maybe it is. All right. Fine. So the question, okay, so far, we haven't really come to any conclusion whether anything involving the teeth or the gums, according to Rashi, is a cholol, but okay, again, we say yes and no, kind of. Depends how severe it is. Okay, the question is, Rabbi Yochanan Hechi Ovidon, how could Rabbi Yochanan go to a goyish woman for a treatment for his teeth? We said before, earlier in the sugya, that any kind of thing that you would be machal Shabbos for, you don't go to a goyish doctor. So therefore, this is something that you would be machal Shabbos for, because Rabbi Yochanan is asking what to do as far as the treatment on Shabbos. And fine, we said maybe not regular teeth conditions, maybe only sardinia. The point is, sardinia is definitely something that you're machal Shabbos for. So how does he do that? The answer is Adam Choshev Shiny. It's different. Rabbi Yochanan is an important person, and therefore, in other words, the goyim would be afraid to harm him. So therefore, there's no problem. Which, again, by the way, factors into what the post can say. Nowadays, in that sense, everybody is considered important, in the sense that, again, the government doesn't make distinctions between whether a person is a commoner or an important person or whatever. In any case, a doctor does malpractice, and they're going to be sued and worse. So the question is, what about we have the example of Rabbi Bohu, who was also an important person. He was the Kodesh of Malchus, that actually mentions from a couple of Gemaras. They're the Romans, obviously. They were the ones in power in Eretz all the time. So Rabbi Bohu was an Adam Choshev, and the Romala Yaakov Noasama, and it happened once that Yaakov the Min prepared for him and gave him a medicine. Ashke and gave it to him to drink. The Tosfos discusses earlier in the Masechta, is it possible that it's the same Yaakov? And Tosfos says probably not, because Rabbi Bohu was generations after Rabbi Eliezer and Ben Doma. Rabbi Eliezer from the first parak and Ben Doma from earlier are a couple of generations before Rabbi Bohu. Mm-hmm. So therefore, Tosfos says no. The pastors are the two different people. You have the one from Rabbi Eliezer, the one Rabbi Eliezer who is the abode of the prophet, and the one who wants to treat Ben Doma is one person. And this Yaakov, we know, is somebody else in Rabbi Bohu's time. Anyway. Not Ashke, he gave him the drink, but Ashoke on his leg. The Romala Yaakov Mina Sama Ashoke. Yaakov Mina put a medicine for him, put a treatment for him on his leg. Well, the problem was, it turned out his Chaverim, Rav Ami and Rav Asi realized that this is actually not something that could have cured Rabbi Bohu, some kind of poison that could harm him. The Eloi Rav Ami and Rav Asi, the Lachachuhu L'Shoke, if not for Rav Ami and Rav Asi being there, and they licked off the medicine, this potion from his leg, when you suck venom out of a wound.
Why they didn't give it to a dog or something like that?
They didn't give it to a dog, it's already on his leg. Oh, why didn't they have a dog? I don't know. Whatever, it didn't harm them, but it's not good. As Steinbeck points out, certain kinds of poisons are only effective if they go through the bloodstream, not if you swallow them. That's how you have the concept. You know, in Boy Scouts, they tell you about sucking venom out of a wound. Same idea, you know. Okay. Anyway, if it weren't for that, Haskell is shocker. They would have had to cut off Rabbi Bohu's leg because they would have gotten infected. So therefore, so we see that. And so Rabbi Bohu is an Adam Choshev. Why is Yaakov, and yet Yaakov Minah was not afraid to pretend to cure him and really try to poison him. So therefore, so we see that in Adam Choshev there's no exception. The answer is, Rabbi Yochanan's case, it wasn't just any old person. It was a doctor, it was an expert doctor, a mumcha l'rabim, somebody who was commonly consulted by the public. Again, as we said before, they don't want to ruin their reputation. Yeah, the question is, Rabbi Bohu Nami Rabbi. Whoever this matron is, was it Rabbi Yochanan went to? Yeah, it was a well-known. The question is, Rabbi Bohu Nami Rosha Mumcha Ava. Rabbi Bohu, this Yaakov Minah, was also a well-known doctor. Still, why wasn't? And yet, we see he wasn't afraid to try and harm his patient. The answer is shiny. Rabbi Bohu. Rabbi Bohu's case is different. Yes, on the one hand, he was an unconscious. On the other hand, in a way, he was kind of too important. he used to open argue with the minim and refute them.
Mm-hmm.
He would point out their mistakes and their misinterpretations and whatever. So therefore, exactly. So therefore, the moichin ben minim ben apshayu Thomas napshi afflicted. The minim will feel about him, as the expression goes. Let me die together with the afflicted. In other words, the min, when it comes to somebody like Rabbo, the min doesn't mind taking a chance and staking his professional reputation. He may lose his reputation. He may lose as long as I get rid of this Rabbo. Yeah. So that's that, basically. So the fact
so
of the matter.
Then.
Well, so the fact of the matter is, most of the poskim. I should have mentioned before, actually. No, so I said before that we mentioned this thing of Adam Choshu. They mentioned it in other contexts. This that we said before that you shouldn't be alone with a goy because Choshu on Shvichus Damim or whatever. So that we say Adam Choshu is different. We mentioned before about Isha Choshuva.
Yeah.
This over here, right. So this one over here, actually, most of the poskim do not bring the difference between Adam Choshu and anybody else. Because they say, since we see over here that Rabbi Baruch was,
So Al Pi Halacha, did he really have the right to go through?
Mm-hmm. So he didn't realize how dangerous it would be. He figured he's an Adam Choshu, or you figured that the guy is a Mumchel Rabbim, he's not going to take this stand, he's not going to risk his reputation. But yeah, okay, fine. More dinim about when we were Chalal. High Padaita, a wound that's caused by a sword or other kind of metal. Padaita is like the Hebrew word pesa. We have last week's parasha. Pesa tachas pasa. The Targum is translated as pita. So that kind of thing, sakanti, that kind of thing is considered dangerous because you can easily get infected, tetanus, whatever. Machal on Shabbos, and therefore you can be machal Shabbos. My asusa, what is the remedy for this?
It's a wound, not necessarily a wound caused by.
So Rashi says pesa makas cherub, that was caused by a sword.
And that's my question. Does it have to be caused by a sword?
Well, not necessarily a sword. We mean some kind of metal thing. The truth is right. You're right. I mean, basically we go according. Basically, when it comes to determining what we're Mechal Shabbos for or not, we go according to whatever contemporary medicine tells us. Yes, you have. If you look at Shmiras Shabbos Kol Kosher, for example, you look at another such sort of medicine in Halacha, you can see that. Yeah, there are many such examples. The Gemara is not trying to give an exhaustive list of it here.
Right.
But we're saying anything caused by metal in and of itself is considered dangerous, as opposed to if it was caused by something else, it depends on the situation. Okay, so that kind of thing. And by the way, that means when we said before wound on the back of the hand or on the top of the leg, that means even if it wasn't caused by metal, if it was caused by metal, then anyway, you have this point. Okay, so anyway, so that kind of thing, you machal Shabbos. My asus, so what is the remedy? For such a wound? So it depends. Well, mitzvah dama, if you're just trying to get the bleeding to stop, tachli machala. What you do is you take tachli, which in English is called press, the kind of plant, you soak it, or grind it up or whatever into vinegar. Tosfos brings two explanations. Either Rashi, and the first explanation in Tosfos is you give the person this concoction to drink, and Tosfos, the second explanation is you apply it to that area to stop the bleeding.
So both drinking.
So it's either one or the other. Lasuki.
So what is it exactly?
So tachli, in English, it's called cress. It's a plant. It's a plant that has a sharpish taste to it. Whatever they use it sometimes. Salad and whatever. Cress. Quest with vinegar. So that's in order to make the bleeding stop. Lasuki, in order to make it actually heal, to make the flesh regrow over there. Mm-hmm. You use garda de yavla. You use yavla. Rashi says is a type of herb. I saw an explanation. I think it was something called dog tooth grass, whatever. It's kind of grass that they use commonly for lawns. Yeah. So Gilda Rashi says is you have grindings from it. You take the roots of it and grind them up, or scrape them rather. You scrape the roots of it and take the scrapings of this yabla grass, the Gilda Dasa, and also scrapings from a thorn bush. And you apply it to the wound, I guess, or you give it to the person to drink, whatever. There's a couple of other explanations. The Aruch says that the yavla means worn out clothes. Asna, he says, means the inside of shoes. Whatever it is, some kind of concoction you make out of those. Or another possibility, nikra mikilkalta, you use a nikra from a garbage dump. Rashi says nikra means wounds. Rabbi Hananel says it means human waste. And the Aruch says it means rag. Whatever it is, okay, apparently they do something for it. I don't know. Okay. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to digress kind of even further. We talked about things that Machal Shabbos for. Now the Gemara is going to digress even a little more to talk about in general different kinds of conditions or diseases or whatever, or wounds that a person might have and how to treat them. You have similar Gemaras in other places. You have some things like this at Shabbos and in Gittin and a number of places. Marshall points out in Gittin you have about two blasts there, you have about two solid blasts of such things. Marshall points out the point is that we should realize that the Torah contains everything. The Torah also contains medicinal wisdom.
Yeah.
Practically speaking, though, the fact of the matter is, practically speaking, already in the times of the Rishonim, the Ma'aril writes, and I think it even goes back to the time of the Gaonim, in general, we don't use these remedies nowadays because, first of all, we don't always know what the ingredients are. Many times we're not sure of the ingredients. And second of all, b'chlal, you have nishtanu aktivim, people's natures have changed, the natures of plants have also changed. If you were to use these remedies, and then they don't work, you're going to end up thinking that the Chachamim don't know what they're talking about, and that might spill over into other areas of life. So therefore, we learn them for what they are as part of Torah, but we don't actually use them nowadays.
And these plants are only in the Middle East?
No, some of them exist in other places. Okay. Omer of Satra. So of Satra says, here's another one. Hi, Invisa. Invisa literally means a grape. So Rashi says that it means a boil, which is shaped like a grape. The Ran adds specifically it means a boil in the rectum, where like a hemorrhoid, in other words. In that case, it would be similar to a hemorrhoid. So that kind of thing. Provinca de Malacha, the Malacha de Moses. That is the agent. That's like the herald of the Malacha Moses. In other words, it's a very dangerous condition. A person has that, and if not treated, then they could die from it. My Asusa. So what's the remedy for it? Tigna bedusha. You take tigna, which is actually defined as a kind of herb called in English rue. I don't know what it looks like, but you can look it up on Wikipedia if you want. It's an herb, whatever. Rue, R-U-E.
Oh, R-U-E.
Yeah, R-U-E, yeah. So you take that, bedusha, you grind it up, and mix it with honey. Carpus levatilia, or you take carpas, parsley or celery or whatever, and mix it with very strong wine. Adahachi vahachi. Meanwhile, while you're trying to get these ingredients together for a permanent cure for this inva, meanwhile, lacy inva sabasmina. Meanwhile, get a grape of the same color as the infection, as the boil or hemorrhoid or whatever. Vinigander iloi and roll it around on top of the boil. Chiverti the chiverti. If the boil is white, then use a white or light colored grape. But uchmasi. If it's a dark colored one, then use a dark colored grape. So that'll hold it for the time being, and then meanwhile you gather these other ingredients together and apply them. Amar Rava. Rava says, here's another one. And by the way, I mean, these have implications in halacha as well, in the sense, for example, again, the Ran's definition of invasa as being a rectal boil, he says, that in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions that what it means is, since we're saying that the herald of the Malach HaMavet, that implies it's considered dangerous enough to be Machal HaShabbos to treat. Okay. Amar Rava. High simta, an abscess. So you were asking about abscesses by the teeth before, but here we're talking about an abscess anywhere around the body, yeah? Travanka de Eshli. That is the herald of a fever. It shows that if it's not treated, then the person is going to end up having a fever. My afsul, so what is the treatment for it? Limchie shittim iskutli. First of all, what you do is you snap on the abscess 60 times with the fingers. You do like this on it 60 times, like soften it, kind of. The liquor is shetibay. Limchie hit it, shittim iskutli, 60 times. 60 finger snaps.
Right.
The liquor is shatzi ve'edav, then cut it open lengthwise and widthwise to drain it. V'hani mila de'lechiver reshe. Now that kind of treatment is only needed if the top of it is not white. Avo chiver reshe, but if the top of it is white, it shows it's soon going to burst open on its own and the pus will come out. Less one above, and there's no problem. It's not a herald of fever, and you don't need to do any of this kind of treatment. It'll open up by itself soon enough. Yeah. Another one, Rabbi Yaakov chosh b'pika. Rabbi Yaakov one time was suffering from pika. So Rashi says that Rashi defines pika as tabas shal beisri, is the rectum, the anus. He uses a French word figure, which means a fig. So then, according to that, it might mean a hemorrhoid. I was thinking it might also be a fistula where you have like a hole that shouldn't a hole in the skin that shouldn't be there that goes to the outside basically. Whatever it is, Odulay Rab Ami Vami Rab Asi Odulay. So Rab Ami gave him the following instructions for treating it, or some say Rab Asi gave him the instructions. Do like this: Lacy Shave Bini Ala Tolana. Take seven seeds of red aloe. Tolana Rashi explains it like Tilashani, so it means red. Aloe is a plant called aloe, or Steinsaltz actually says it may be a different one called ice plant, whatever. Take
it on your phone?
What? No. You can look it up yourself if you want. Anyway, take seven seeds of red aloe, or red ice plant.
Right.
But Sayolei B'Chalola Devet Savara.
We use today aloe.
Yeah, we use the aloe vera is not necessarily the same thing as aloe. Here we're talking about
derivatives.
I don't think so. I think they're different plants. Rashi explains over here specifically we're talking about the kind of ahal, the kind of aloe or whatever plant it is that they use for washing clothes. These are whatever kind of plant that we're talking about. It contains a certain amount of natural soap in it, and therefore it's very good for washing clothes. Anyway, whatever it is, so you take seven seeds from it. V'tsayolei b'chalola devei tzavara. Take a piece of cloth that used to be in the neck hole of a shirt. So the way they would make a shirt in those days, their shirt in those days was more like one of our talisim katanim or whatever. So you'd have originally it's one big rectangular piece of cloth, and then they cut a hole in the middle for the neck. So take that piece of cloth that was originally closing up a neck hole, and put the seeds inside it. The lichrichale nirabarka. Tie around it a loop of animal hair. The tomishle benatva chibra. Dip it into white tree sap, or a different girsa is naphtha, which is naphtha in English. It's a very flammable liquid. The liklie, then burn it.
Tomishle
benatva chibra. Dip this whole bundle into white naphtha. So either it's naphtha or it's naphtha. Naphtha would be sap from a tree. Chivra would be white. Naphtha, if you have the other gears, so naphtha would mean, in English it's also called that, naphtha. Oh. So it's a very flammable liquid that's made, I think, from pine tree sap, I think, or something. Anyway, the liquid, burn the whole thing. Obadele ilave, and sprinkle the ashes on this area, on the picker, on the hemorrhoid or whatever it is. Adahachi bahachi, meanwhile, while you're trying to get together all these ingredients, for temporary relief, lacy kashisa de asna, take seeds from the fruit that grows on thorn bushes. Linach pika asna is a thorn bush, like snare in Hebrew. Yeah. Linach pika lahadi pika. Take the groove that's in the seeds and put it on the groove of the pika. Temporarily, that'll give the seed has a groove on one side. The pica, whether it's a hemorrhoid or a fistula or whatever, also has like a groove in the skin over there. So therefore, apply the side of the seed that has the groove, apply that to the groove in the skin. And that'll give temporary relief. And meanwhile, you get together these other ingredients and then burn them to make the ashes that'll cure it. The honey mealy pica you law. Now, all that works if you have an external hemorrhoid or fistula or whatever, where you can reach it, where you can get the ashes on it. Pika tata mai. What about if it's further in? If it's further up
internal
in the rectum and you can't reach it, what do you do then? Then
tata seems to be
tata means
lower.
Literally lower, but it means lower. In other words, in the sense that it's deeper inside. In other words, so what do you do then? Laisi tarba de spirito de la yiftach. Take fat from a female goat that has never given birth, the lifshar, melt that fat, the lishtibe, and then inject or apply that fat in over there where the hemorrhoid or whatever it is. The eloi, and if not, meaning if you can't find such a goat or you tried it and it didn't work, in general, with all these kinds of things, with all these medicinal things, whenever the Gemara says v'iloi, it means one of those two things. It means either you couldn't find those ingredients, or it means you tried and it didn't work. So then here's an alternative. Leiti tlas tarfa kora, take three leaves from a pumpkin, demiyabshi betula, that were dried in the shade, so not that you didn't leave them out in the sun to dry, you left them in the shady area, but eventually they dried out. Velikli, burn those leaves, velivdera lave, and then take the ashes and sprinkle them over that area. The eloi, and if not, if you don't have such leaves available, or you tried it and it didn't work, Leiti mishakdi cheldoni, then take the shells of snails. The Gemara doesn't elaborate what to do with them, but I guess
chelazon is a snail.
Chelazon in general is some kind of shell creature. You have a chelazon that chelas was made out of, which is some kind of shellfish, and you have three or four different opinions among chachamim of the last 100 years or so what it is. You have the Radziner chelas, you have Herzog chelas, etc. Yeah.
They found some chelas that they DNA'd and they found the animal.
They found something that they think is chelas, that they know for sure it is. It could have been kola ilon, it could have been some other kind of dye, whatever. Fine, they found that it came from some kind of animal. That doesn't necessarily mean that it is the original chelas from the Torah. We don't know. So you have the Radziner, 130 or so years ago, identified what he claimed was the chelas from Tanakh, from the Torah, that it's a secretion from an animal called the cuttlefish. And you have people who wear such chelas nowadays. You have Herzog, the first chief rabbi of Israel, came up with his own theory that it's from some kind of other shellfish, murex, I think, or something. Whatever. You have three or four different possibilities that they've come up with. Anyway, but chelazon in general means a creature with a shell. So over here it means a snail. A regular kind of snail. So you take the shell of it. So the Gemara doesn't say what to do with the shell, but I would imagine probably you grind it up and apply it there. I don't know. Maybe the calcium in it does some good. I have no idea. Okay. The eloi, if that doesn't work either, maiti meshachkira, take a mixture of oil and wax, velinkait, he should cover himself. So the person should take this wax and oil mixture, I guess, and apply it to the area. And then the linkite, then he should make sure to wear the shachki de kitna bakaita. He should make sure to wear worn out linen clothing during the summer so he doesn't get overheated, because linen is cooler than wool. Or the amagufna besitva, and then he should make sure to wear cotton clothes which are warmer in the winter.
Why warmer in winter?
Because in the winter you need to be warm. I guess to protect that area in general. Right. I guess to protect his body. I don't know.
Yeah. Cotton.
Amagufna means cotton. Literally means semer gefen. It's called in Hebrew. It means literally means wool from a vine. Wool from a vine. Semer gefen. But that's cotton grows on non-vine-like plants.
I didn't think they had cotton. It wasn't as common.
It wasn't as common, but you do have it mentioned in Mishnah. It's mentioned sporadically here and there. So it wasn't as commonly grown as it is nowadays. Okay. Rabbo Chosh Ve'udne. One time Rabbo who had an earache. Oydele Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Yechanan gave him the following instruction.
We still don't know the real definition of halal.
Halal, we said already, anything that's within the teeth, anything that's within the lips. We discussed the question, does it mean the teeth or not? We didn't come to any conclusion. That's what I'm saying. So we say, if it's just a minor toothache, then no. If it's a major toothache, then have a goy bullet. Yeah.
But what about the body itself?
The body itself, then definitely a machal Shabbos for anything within the body.
Inside the body.
Right. Fine. Rabbo one time had an earache. Oydele Rabbi Yechanan, so Rabbi Yechanan gave him the following instruction to cure it. Va'amile Beit Medrash, or some say that rather it was the people in the Bishmadrash, the other Chachamim in the Bishmadrash gave him the instruction. My Oydele, so what were the instructions they gave him? The answer is the instructions they gave him were Kihod Amar Abaya, were similar to what Abaya said. Abaya is parallel, he lived at the same time, more or less. In Babel, he was younger than them, so it's not they didn't tell him that Abaya said this, but they told him the same thing that Abaya later on reported, that Omri Li Aim, Abaya says, my mother told me, and the Gemara explains in Kiddushin, she wasn't actually his mother. His mother died in childbirth. It means his foster mother. It means, his foster mother, stepmother, whatever, the one who raised him. Throughout Shas, he quotes many, many different things, usually in medicine, sometimes in other areas of life, in her name. So Omri Li Aim, Lo Ivri Kuyosa El La'udna. The kidneys were created only for the sake of the ear. In other words, kidneys, something from kidneys is a very effective treatment for the ear. Other than that, there wouldn't, in other words, in a certain sense, there wouldn't really be a need for kidneys if it weren't for that. And by the way, I want to digress, but you're thinking to yourself the obvious question. If you don't have, if a person doesn't have kidneys, Rahman al-Islam, they die of blood poisoning. The answer is, the pashtus we're talking about over here, kidneys from a kosher animal, and it's interesting, in halacha, in Hilchos Tzareithis, if an animal is missing its kidneys, it's actually kosher. It's not considered to be
really?
A tzareithis. And now it's
cannot. I mean,
right.
You cannot live without
you would think. You would think. However, it's interesting, actually, that some 30-odd years ago, they did an experiment in the Netherlands,
right.
where they removed the kidneys from kosher animals, from cows, I think, or whatever, and they found they were still able to go on living. Why? Because in this case, they only kept them alive for a few days, and then. But the point is, it was long enough to see that they didn't have any ill effects from it, because they realized what's going on is kosher animals, since they have four stomachs, they can excrete the waste from their bloodstream using one of their other stomachs. They don't need kidneys for it so much. Therefore, that fits with what halacha says, that an animal does not have to have kidneys in order to live, and that's what we're saying over here. That the only reason Hashem created kidneys in kosher animals is to have an effective treatment for earaches. So Rava says in this connection, Omali Manyumi Asya, Manyumi the doctor told me, Kulu Shakyonu Koshul Udna, any kind of liquid treatments are bad for the ear. Lavami Maya de Kuyasa, except for the juice from kidneys. So how do you do it? Laisi Kuyasa de Barcha Karcha, you take the kidney of a bald goat. Doesn't necessarily literally mean bald, as in it has no hair.
How do you say kidney now in modern Hebrew?
Kidney is kulya in modern Hebrew. So kulyata is Aramaic.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Barcha karcha means a male goat. It doesn't necessarily mean hairless. In a few places that Rashi explains, I think Rashi explains elsewhere, that a goat is called karcha in the sense, unlike a sheep which has wool, a goat has hair, okay, but
yeah,
it's much thinner coat. Anyway, so you take a kidney from it, velikare shefi ve'erev, you tear it lengthwise, you cut it lengthwise and widthwise, velenach amalula denura, put it on top of glowing coals to roast, v'hanu maya denafkimine, now the juice that comes out of it as it's roasting, l'shidinu ba'udne, that you should apply to the ear. Make sure that it's not cold, that it's not too cold or too hot. It should be lukewarm.
So
that's the treatment for earache. Therefore, so that's what they recommended.
Well, you
sort of
put it inside the ear, or you put it.
I don't know. Maybe you put it inside the ear. Maybe you apply it to the outside. Maybe it depends what part of the ear the earache is in. I don't know. Lashadia literally means you throw it. So it can mean like you inject it. It can mean like you pour it in. I don't know. Okay. The Eloy, and if not, if you don't have such a goat available. That then or it doesn't work, right? Then another possibility, Lacey Tauber de Chipushisa Gamlinissa, take fat from a large beetle, the lifshar, melt that fat, the lishtide, and apply it to the ear. The eloy, and if not, Lamalya Laudne Mishcha, then what you do is you fill the ear with oil. The levit shev psilta d'aspasta, you make 7 wicks out of aspasta. Aspasta is grain when it's in its early stages of growth, before the kernels have grown, all you have is the stalk of wheat or barley or whatever. At that point, it's called aspasta. So you make 7 wicks out of that. The lysi shuksa d'turma, then you take the handles of garlic, meaning the dried leaves that are attached to garlic.
Shum is
garlic. So you take the dried leaves from it that are attached to it. You take such leaves. The lace of barka b'chadresha, you tie some animal hair to one end of this whiff made out of aspasta.
I'm translating all that.
I had to look all this up ahead of that. That's why I'm here.
I've never seen you with a sheep.
I did when we were doing gifting. I had to do that kind of thing.
You must have really enjoyed yourself.
Fortunately, the Daf Yomi Advancement Forum online has translations. I modified them a little bit, but basically, yeah. Okay. Anyway. So you fill up the ear with oil. You make 7 wicks out of aspasta, out of early stage grain stalks. You take dried leaves of garlic. The lace of barka b'chadresha, you tie some animal hair to one end of the wick. The litli b'hunura, you light one end of the wick on fire. The idach resha moitzva b'udna, the other end of the wick you put into the ear. The lace of Udne Lahadunura. So you have the fire is burning at one end of the wick, and meanwhile the other end of the wick is in the ear inside the oil. The Pashtus, I guess what it does is it pulls out, whatever. I don't know what it does exactly, but whatever.
The oil into the ear.
Maybe it helps the oil go into the ear. Maybe it helps pull the oil as well as whatever is causing infection or whatever. I don't know.
No
way. The lace of Udna Lahadonura, he should have his ear facing the fire. The Zaha Mizika, but be careful of wind. He should make sure that he should make sure that there's no breezes or drafts or whatever that would get into his ear. Vinishko choda, vinina choda, and then what you do is, why do you have seven wicks? Because when you finish with one wick, then you put the second wick, and so
it takes the oil out.
I have no idea what it does exactly. Maybe it takes the oil out and takes the infection with it. Maybe it helps the oil get into the ear better, so that, I don't know, but whatever it is. Lishnachrina, another version of that last treatment is the Eloi, is that if you couldn't do the thing with the fat from the goat's kidney or the fat from the large beetle, then, according to the second version, Lacey Shev Silta Bikra, you take seven wicks of Bikra. Bikra very likely is Bikra is the same word Barka that we said before, animal hair. That's why Rashi doesn't define it. So you take seven wicks made out of that. The Shayef Le Mishchad Aspasta, smear them with oil made from Aspasta, again from these early stalks. There's a different gear set, that you find in Kisveyad, not oil of Aspasta, but oil of Afarsima, which is balsam oil.
Aspasta is what?
Aspasta is early grain stalks when they're first growing.
Weed or barley.
Or whatever, yeah. So either
it contains a kernel.
It doesn't contain kernels. Yeah, it just contains the stalk. But I guess there's some oil in it because it has to grow. It has proteins in it. Whatever. I guess I don't know. Or a girsa that you find in Kisveyad is mishchad afarisimol, which means balsam oil. The nesi chadresha benura, the chadresha beudne. Again, you take these wicks. You take one of these wicks and light one end on fire and put the other end in his ear. The nishko choda, the nina choda. As one is used up, you take one out and you put in the next one. The izah mizika. And again, be careful about wind. Be careful about drafts that would get into the ear and harm.
Zika is wind.
Yeah. The eloy, and if not, if that doesn't work either, or you couldn't do it. Lacy udra denada de lemashkif. Take wool that was dyed purple, that was not combed out, v'ninachba, place it on the ear. V'litli l'udne ba'adi nura, he should place his ear near the fire. And again, be careful of drafts. V'iloy, and if not, if even that doesn't work, leisi gubsa dekanya atika ba'meyashnin, take a tube from a reed that's old, that was detached from the ground 100 years ago.
Gufta is what?
Gufta means a tube. The kanya of bamboo or reeds or whatever. Atika, that is old, by Meishnin, 100 years old. The limlechei milcha glolanisa. Salt it with coarse salt. The likli, burn it. The lidbak, and then apply the ashes to the ear. The simona, the bottom line is, the way to remember what kind of treatment is good for what kind of ear condition. Now, you have different kinds. Some kinds of ear condition involve where there's liquid coming out of it, like the pus or whatever. Some kinds you have where the ear is dry, where nothing is coming out of it. So the way to remember, retiva liyabeshta viyabeshta lirutiva. The way to remember it is you use the liquid, the treatments that involve liquid, like the oil or whatever, where the ear has a problem with it, where it's dry, where nothing is coming out of it. Use the dry treatments, for example, the last one that we mentioned involving ashes, use those for an ear that's oozing.
So wet for dry and dry for
wet. Wet for dry and dry for wet. And we'll continue tomorrow with a couple of other, with some other dinim about medicine.
Okay, well, yeah. Well,